May it please the court, Mr. Hardy. My name is Ole Tostanowski on behalf of petitioner Francisca Ingram-Toro. This is a case where Ms. Ingram-Toro deserves asylum because she suffered past persecution as an ethnic Chinese and a Christian in Indonesia, and she has a well-founded fear of future persecution should she return there. The evidence makes it clear that at the very least, there's a practice or pattern of abuse against Chinese, ethnic Chinese, and Christians in Indonesia, if not outright persecution. And it is against this background that Ms. Ingram-Toro herself experienced past persecution. The record shows that while she was a college student in Subaraya, 3 hours away from her home, which was in Probolinggo, She was involved in church activities and helping out the poor and giving out toys and items to children. And she received anonymous calls at that time in which she was warned to stop doing those things because she was trying to convert people to Christianity. While she was receiving these anonymous calls in Subaraya, back in her home 3 hours away, Native Indonesian men came to her father's store and asked for her by name. They came in December 2002. They came again in January 2003, both times she was away at college in Subaraya. And they came for the third time in August 2003, armed with machetes, again asking for her specifically by name. At that time, Ms. Ingram-Toro was in her father's store in the back. She saw the men. Apparently, they didn't see her. She fled after these men came, and the men ended up setting her father's store on fire and destroying the store. She escaped by fleeing. She and her father and her father's employees filed police reports. But nothing happened. Nobody was found. And shortly thereafter, Ms. Ingram-Toro fled to the United States. Now, the immigration judge found Ms. Ingram-Toro to be credible. However, he erroneously held that she had only experienced harassment or discrimination and no past persecution. However, I submit to this court that having armed men come to your father's store asking for you by name and then burning down the store is something more than just mere harassment or discrimination. The Board of Immigration Appeals, in turn, affirmed the immigration judge's decision but said that in addition to the reasons that the immigration judge gave, that Ms. Ingram-Toro could relocate to another part of Indonesia. However, that ignores the fact that the threats that occurred in this case, where the men came asking for her by name to her father's store, occurred while she was 3 hours away in college doing volunteer work and engaged in various church activities. She was already in another part of the country. And in addition to that, she testified that her father ended up fleeing to the island of Bali, and there he received an anonymous phone call asking if he was Christian and whether he was Chinese. So I submit to this court that, in fact, Ms. Ingram-Toro has experienced past persecution and does have a well-founded fear of future persecution should she return to Indonesia, that she is in danger, in countrywide danger, because as the background evidence in the case indicates, there's continuing strife and abuse against ethnic Christians, against Christians in Indonesia. For example, the last International Religious Freedom Report in the record indicated that more churches had been destroyed the year before than previously. The latest country report in the record indicates that because of large-scale corruption, many perpetrators of human rights violations are not brought into accountability for their actions. And for all these reasons, this court should grant the petition for review and remand to the board, because Ms. Inventura does in fact have a well-founded fear of future persecution should she return to Indonesia. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court, I'm Joseph Hardy, appearing for the Attorney General. Now, I don't want to rehash the briefs. You have all that before you, but I just want to put the case in its proper context. Ms. Inventura comes from, by at least Indonesian standards, a wealthy family. She testified at length in both her affidavit and her testimony, a brief to the board and a brief to this court, that her father has had a very successful tile business from at least the 90s in Indonesia. And men had been coming to her father's store, native Indonesians had been coming to her father's store after finding out that the father had been giving donations to his own church, looking for donations to their own church, and he had been doing that. I think the evidence is from about 98 or 99 on throughout 2003. And her father was able to send her to schools. Ms. Inventura wasn't even in Probolinggo for most of her life. She was away in Surabaya through grade school, high school, and college. So the only incidents of any harassment or discrimination that she's mentioned in this case have been in Probolinggo. And everything has been directed towards her father. This court has not recognized claims, these type of derivative claims of asylum.
Is this really the classic derivative claim? They came into the store looking for her.
Well, they had been coming into the store by her own testimony for years. And, you know, there's a nexus problem here. She says that this is based on activities that she'd done in 99 when she first started college, 3 hours away in Surabaya.
I understand that there's a nexus problem between this petitioner's this petitioner's activities and the particular acts of arson and what have you that were taken. But still, going back to my question, is this really a derivative case? This is like two people. If you got two people standing in a grandstand and the assassin's a bad shot, the person who isn't hit is still the subject of the ire and the persecution of the person who was a bad shot, right?
If I can point out that it's not until the brief that petitioner says that this is not a derivative asylum claim, and her affidavit and her testimony, it's always been about what's happened to her father, not what's happened to her. And I believe
what's
on page...
What's happened to her father because of her. He's the guy standing between her and the guy who's trying to get her. That's her case.
That's just it. We don't know what these men were after her for.
That's a question of proof. I understand that.
Yes.
But to characterize this as a derivative claim, it seems to me, is to take that and that analysis one step further, and I don't see any basis for doing that.
Well, we really only have one material incident that's happened here, the August 2003 incident, and there's question about what exactly has happened there. There's an inconsistency between her own testimony and the affidavit of whether she was harmed or not. And when the judge specifically asked her to clarify that, she said, I don't understand why my police report says that there were that I was harmed, because I wasn't. It was only, and we don't even know what happened.
She was honest about it.
She was honest.
She wasn't hurt.
She wasn't hurt, and she hasn't been hurt here at all.
Also, what is the stuff about her being wealthy? I mean, wealthy people have rights too, don't they?
Well,
and I really was kind of incensed by the government starting this argument that way. This is a wealthy girl who had a lot of privileges in Indonesia. What she's obviously trying to do is, you know, better herself. That was the implication of your remark.
I think the implication is that, and I would point the court to the IE case that was decided last year. She's claiming that this is a particular social group based on being ethnic Chinese Christian in Indonesia, not being a the daughter of a wealthy store owner. In the IE case, the court explicitly rejected that same type of claim. And even there, the guy owned the store himself. His brother was actually killed. He believed it was on account of his own actions, but again, it was a nexus problem. What proof do you have that these people, even if they were looking for you, that they were looking for you on account of any protected ground? And here she specifically says on account of her being an ethnic Chinese Christian living in Indonesia.
You have relied on a case I wrote, the Karudian case.
Yes.
For the proposition that there's no is a systemic immigration, systemic persecution against Chinese Christians. Is that a fair reading of that case? Does it made, is it, does that, isn't that case fairly fact-specific?
I think the only evidence here are these pattern and practice cases are a very narrow type of case. It's if you find that Ms. Engman Toro has a pattern and practice or that there's a pattern and practice of persecution against ethnic or ethnic Christians, Chinese Christians in Indonesia, you find that a country, the fourth largest country in the world where ethnic Chinese people make up about anywhere from 10 to 20% of the population, that's about 20 to 30 million people, then that entire class of people would be eligible for asylum here.
And you're saying it's beyond the pale that that might be happening in Indonesia today.
Yes. And the immigration judge, the only evidence we have here of any objective evidence is the February 28, 2005 country reports, which the immigration judge submitted into the evidence. Neither of the parties did. And
well,
the Karudin decision
surprising.
Was... I'm sorry?
That's not surprising.
Yeah. The Karudin decision was based on that same country report, finding that, yes, in 98 there were problems, but problems have not broken out on a wide-scale problem since then. And even the evidence that Ms. Ingmatora has submitted into the evidence here, in November 98, her own town, when there was a riot in the neighboring towns of Bondowoso and Kraxlan, her town was heavily guarded, Probolinggo was heavily guarded by the local police and the army, and her family and her father's store were safe. And it's not until, even after the August 2003 incident, she showed, it's a question of whether there's even a subjective fear that anything would happen to Ms. Engman Toro herself, because she and her family actually went to the police afterwards and, were looking for help from the police. Unfortunately, we don't know what the police would have been able to do, because her and her family relocated first to Surabaya, and again, there were no problems there. After that, her family relocated to Malang, where her father's mother lived, and there was no problem there.
The
I know,
point
Mr.
being that she may not be able to show that this is government prosecution.
Yes,
persecution.
And the fact that it's not countrywide, as the board and both the immigration said. I believe counsel said that the board made an alternative
going
finding. The IJ made that same.
To that point, Mr. Hardy, my point is if the government's going to cite every case in which there is a failure of proof that there's systemic discrimination against a group, we're going to have to read for the proposition that it is as a matter of law there's no systemic persecution of that group. We're going to have to reevaluate the way we write our opinions around here, because all we're saying is there's a failure of proof in that case, not that a case can't be made.
In all fairness, and I would say that in this case also, there's a failure of proof of that there's a systemic problem or of people trying to persecute ethnic Chinese in the country. And even if you notice that when Ms. Engman Toro and her sister, I believe, Like, left the her father's store, they left with one of their native Indonesian workers there. So it's, if there's a problem of people persecuting ethnic Chinese there, you have a man who's working with them. If they had a problem with Ms. Engman Toro's charity work 3 years before, then why wouldn't they have a problem with the father's work or the father's donations to his own church? Why come, well, we want money also. I believe this is more a problem of the fact that the, and I understand that you said that you were incensed that the implication, but I believe this is more a problem of the fact that they are a wealthy family and the ethnic Indonesians were coming looking for money more than the fact that Ms. Engman Toro was that ethnic Chinese, or even comment. The father and the entire family.
That would be a fair comment on your behalf.
And I'd also like to point out, as I suggested a little earlier, that she can relocate here. She lived in Surabaya just about her entire life with no problem. The only problem she has was an probolingo. It's like saying, you know, I can't live in Chicago because of problems I had and smaller, I think St. Louis is about 3 hours away, 3 or 4 hours away from here. And, you know, she lived in Milan, she had no problem. And then she's come to the United States, but her family has moved on to be honest, the resort island of Bali. And she's testified that her father's looking to open up his own grocery store there. And the only evidence that she said that, you know, she can't relocate as far as that is, well, these men called my father asking if he's ethnic Chinese and Christian. Well, that's the father. You know, you can't make a claim based on your father's problem. I see that my time has expired.
Mr. Hardy, I have one other question before you sit down, if I may. Was this immigration judge one of the judges mentioned in the Inspector General's report of July 28, 2008?
No, this immigration judge, I believe, had been there even before this administration.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Right? Does he have any time? How much? What? 4 minutes. All right, sir. I won't take up much of your time, but I just want to emphasize the fact that the men that came to Ms. Ingman-Torres' father's store specifically asked for her. And the fact that this was 3 hours away from where she was living at the time shows why there's a problem with relocation.
Counsel, can you answer Mr. Hardy's point, though, that this activity against your client was not really at the hands of the Indonesian government, but you really haven't been able to show that the Indonesian government is either unwilling or unable to protect her and her family?
Well, what I can say is that the family did go to the police to complain about, obviously, the arson and what had occurred prior to the arson, and nothing happened.
That happens. I mean, it happens a certain number of times. I mean, you don't catch the crook. But can we say that this was done on a wink and a nod?
Your Honor, I think we can infer that in the sense that these men came to the store three times, and they walked into the store with machetes the third time. They had no compunction in doing this. They didn't fear they would be caught. They didn't fear there would be any repercussions. I think we can make that inference from the general conditions existing in the country, where at the very least there's a widespread abuse and harassment of the Chinese, ethnic Chinese minority and ethnic Christian minority, if not outright persecution on a pattern basis.
This is based on their ethnicity or religion or both?
I think the two are intertwined in that they're both part of minority as ethnic Chinese, and they're also minority as Christians. It's difficult to separate the two.
Do they want his money?
There's no indication that the men that came on the three occasions when they specifically asked for Ms. Ingman-Torres wanted money. They wanted to know where she was. There's no indication from the record whatsoever that they asked for any money.
In the past, had they been asking for money? Or somebody?
In the past, others had come.
Others?
To ask for money, and it was, as described by Ms. Ingman-Torres, it was more in the way of extortion than, if you'll give us money, something will happen. But on these specific occasions which I mentioned, the men that came specifically asked for Ms. Ingman-Torres. There was no mention of money. They wanted to know her whereabouts. Thank you.
All right, counsel. Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We will now proceed to case number 7 and take the last case under